Welcome to the Muscle Expert Podcast with Ben Pakulski, one of the world's top professional bodybuilders, an expert on human performance and mindset mastery. Ben dives deep to deliver the strategies of the top experts to upgrade your body, mind, muscle, strength, performance, biochemistry, and how to become the upgraded modern man. Join us on BenPakulski.com to learn the cutting-edge techniques to take control of your body, your brain, and create your greatest life.
Welcome to another episode of the Muscle Expert Podcast. I am your host, Ben Pakulski, and as always, we're on the cutting edge of everything to do with upgrading your life, upgrading your muscle, and upgrading your health. And today's guest, John Jaquish, is the creator of a couple of cutting-edge technologies that we're going to dive deep into. A couple of things that are challenging the paradigm of fitness and muscle building, which you know I love to do. I hate the idea that everyone's stuck in their bias and they get in their own way because of their own self-fulfilling beliefs. John is definitely outside of the paradigm. He is a creator of something called OsteoStrong, which is a technology that is shown clinically to massively improve bone density, which for many of us isn't a consideration until it is. And I'll tell you, my own experience is shared in this podcast with bone density, and it's actually something that may be very useful and applicable to you guys. John's also created something called X3, which he named it after, you know, three times the possibility for muscle growth. He's got a lot of research backing his technology, and it's something you can kind of do on the road. It's something you can add to your routine to improve what John is going to suggest, endogenous growth hormone production, so your body's own natural production. He's just a really smart dude, a really cool guest, and I really enjoyed having on the episode. And definitely listen to the protocol he's going to recommend for optimizing growth hormone. I'm also going to give you guys a link in the show notes to a workout that he's going to customize just for you on how to take advantage of his technology in the shortest amount of time for a immediate increase in growth hormone and thereby fat loss by John's suggestion. So definitely check out the show notes at benpakulski.com/podcasts. This episode is graciously brought to you by ATP Labs. You guys know I've recently aligned myself with ATP Labs. In fact, the reason I did so was because these guys have a cutting edge manufacturing facility and they bring in only the best ingredients. They literally have a guy on staff who travels around sourcing out the best ingredients. And then they have a team of formulators putting together only the most efficaciously designed products that actually have a purpose. It's not just a mishmash of things being thrown together because this one said to do this and this one said to do that. They're actually doing it from a perspective of complementary pairings of ingredients to make sure it's driving the right pathway in the body. And for most of you guys, that doesn't matter. All that matters is it works, and it works well, and it is what it says on the label, and it is the best quality products that I've been able to find anywhere. Check out atplab.com, and we are expanding their line, and as you guys know, I will be coming out with my own designs and my own formulations in the near future, not to give myself a shameless plug. Also brought to you by Prime Fitness USA. If you guys haven't checked out Prime Fitness USA, you know it's the primary brand I use here in the Muscle Intelligence headquarters in Tampa. Really, really great products for maximum efficiency in your workouts. They've got a bunch of other stuff if you're just someone who wants to improve your workouts, like rotate handles, like squat wedges. If you're someone who doesn't, you're not a great squatter, or maybe you want to improve your output in your workouts. Those are some simple things you can add to your regime that everyone can benefit from, as well as having some of the best exercise equipment on the planet. PrimeFitnessUSA.com. Find them on Instagram and Facebook, and also linked in the show notes. I hope you guys love this episode. Definitely stick around to the end to hear John's recommendation for how to optimize growth hormone naturally, and a offer that we make to you as far as a way that you guys might be able to attend one of my camps here in Tampa for free. Drop me a review, guys. Love to hear from you. Give me a shout out on Instagram and anywhere. And know that I will be the guy personally responding. So it's me and nobody else, and I'd love to hear from you. So that's IFBB Bedpack or the Muscle Experts on Instagram. Peace out. Enjoy. What's up, boys and girls? Muscle Expert Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Pokolsky. I've got a friend of mine, John Jacquishon, here, who's got some amazing insights into training that you guys all want to hear about. You know me, being the paradigm breaker, being the paradigm buster, I'm trying to always bring in people who are thinking ahead of the game, people who are maybe doing things that are controversial to what you believe, so that we challenge the paradigm that exists in fitness and muscle building now. As I've said before, I believe that muscle building is 30 years behind where it should be. Sounds like a bold claim, but why are we basing our training off of what was designed in the 60s by Joe Weider and these Weider principles? They're absolutely ridiculous. And this gentleman happens to agree with me and happens to have some very unique thoughts on how we can not only, you know, hack muscle building, get the most out of our time, but also hack bone density. John, how you doing, man?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me, Ben.
Thank you for being on here. So I know you're doing a lot of really cool stuff. You've been in the fitness industry for a long time. You're doing a lot of really cool stuff based around, like I just mentioned, really hacking bone density, hacking training to get the most of your time and effort. And that's what everyone's after, right? Like, you know, no one wants to spend 2 hours in the gym. People want to have the results, right? Like, don't teach me how to fish. Just give me the damn fish. So ultimately, man, I'd love to dive deep onto talking a little bit about your history and how you kind of progressed into where you are now to start to give our listeners an idea of who you are and what you're about, man.
Nice. That's probably the best start. So actually, this journey started, it was kind of a 50-50 between me being a college rugby player and very interested in athletics. And I knew that training would get me a lot of places that I wouldn't otherwise just be able to walk out on the rugby pitch and be successful. So that was a thing for me. And then my mother was diagnosed with osteoporosis, and she had me a little bit older. And so her greatest anxiety was I won't be able to do the things that my son wants me to do.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you're a parent, you know, like you want to be there for your kids. And so she wanted to do stuff with me. She was an active tennis player. She was an athlete.
Yep.
And she's like, oh my God, my bones are falling apart. I'm going to break something. And then of course, osteoporotic fractures, specifically hip fractures, end almost as many lives or a comparable number as many lives as breast cancer.
Wow.
Yeah. A lot of younger women don't know that. So she got these statistics and was terrified. And so she says to me, what can I do about this? And so I said, well, okay, let me look into it. And in looking into it, I came to a very different conclusion than the rest of the medical community had come to with this disease. And let me also back up. I also came to the thought process of the fact that if we can make something work for an elderly person, like if you and I train somebody and they're older and we can show with a particular method we can grow muscle, they're the most compromised, right? They're the worst. So we can take somebody who's like not in that good of a place to be able to build muscle, and we can build muscle on them. Then how does that apply to the rest of the population? Profoundly. That's how it applies. So I looked at my mother and I said, I think I have an idea, because I read all this stuff about gymnasts, and they stood out. Gymnasts stood out way beyond what other individuals, other athletes did. Sprinters a little bit, but specifically gymnasts. And it's well studied, because in gymnastics, people pound on the ground the same way. Like their form is exactly the same every time. So that takes a lot of variables out of it, and you can really understand how the musculoskeletal system behaves in that very controlled environment. So they had bone density that's 2 standard deviations above normal. So that's, you know, superhuman. So I thought, okay, it's all about this impact. However, we tell people low impact exercise is better, or we have for older people, you know, swimming, or even for guys who lift, you don't want to be explosive. You don't want to bounce a bar off your chest. You don't want to do box jumps have become popular now, but that was not popular when I was an undergrad. I graduated in 2002. That was not even talked about then. So what to do? So the joke was, hey, mom, you know, you can become a gymnast. And that was completely unhelpful for a woman in her 70s. But what I said was, what if I could get the benefits of gymnastics without the risks? And so that took me down a path of creating a device that creates axial compression. It's called OsteoStrong. So it takes like the axis of a bone. So this is the axis of my clavicle. And what I want to do is take this bone and compress it like this, right? So, but it has to be compressed at a very high rate. So I learned through this process that 4.2 multiples of body weight, this is important for everybody listening to remember, 4.2 multiples of body weight is the minimum dose response to trigger bone growth in the hip. Now, we don't know about the other bones of the body, but for the hip, that's the one that medicine is pretty much focused on, because those are the fractures that kill people. If it's 4.2 multiples body weight, you think like most people squatting are not getting that.
Not even close.
So what I ended up doing, I created a device with a computer screen that's in front of you that shows you biofeedback, and then you do four movements. So one's like an upper extremity movement where it's almost like a chest press. One's a lower extremity movement, like kind of like a leg press. One's like a deadlift, and the other one is similar to sort of a core crunch, like fetal position sort of thing. So those are the impact ready positions. So we're mimicking impact, mimicking high impact forces are the positions that your biomechanics automatically go to. So you trip and fall, you're going to put your hands right here, right? 120 degree angle of inclusion between the upper arm and lower arm. And your hands basically lined up with your clavicle.
Yep.
Like you're not going to put your hands up here, and you're not going to put your hands really low. You're also not going to do this. So those positions were all known. So we identified all those positions, and there's lots of research on that, and then allowed people to self-compress bone. So they're creating the force, and then they look at a computer screen that shows them how much force that they're capable of producing. And if they go to fatigue in those positions, now keep in mind, this is fatigue that's very different from what you get at the gym. So like the first time I did the upper extremity movement, I did 700 pounds. So it's been a little over 10 years since I've been doing that. Now I push 2,100 pounds. So I have 2,100 pounds going through the small bones of my wrist. That doesn't mean I can bench press 2,100 pounds.
Right.
If I could, I would have led with that.
It's a static movement. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I would have loved that in the opening.
It's not static in that you can see somebody do it, and I'll send you a link to a video of me doing it when I surpassed 2,100 pounds. There is movement, but the movement is from the actual like compression of the joint. Like you can actually see a change in the like the machine doesn't move. The movement is from the compression of bone.
This is massive, man. So like. Every one of my followers has joint problems and injuries and tendon things from probably some degree of deterioration in their joints, tendons, ligaments. So I think this is, you know, massively applicable for everybody. You know, anyone who's 30 years, I said everybody, I make this joke, like you hit 30, it's always, you know, the cliche, like you hit 30 and things go downhill. But man, I hit 30 and shit started to hurt. And I do lift heavy, right? But what you're saying is we're probably never hitting that threshold of joint compression unless you're doing something like jumping and landing repetitively to really hit those thresholds of...
And your biomechanics are perfect to absorb that high impact force.
Right, rather than just
the problem is, as some of us, even like when we were little kids, got a little something, a sprain, something, started compensating by changing our movement patterns. And... you see people who – you can take two runners and they seem to run exactly the same way, and one has joint problems, the other one doesn't. But it's the history of the biomechanics that's so important, because we're all attenuating subconsciously all sorts of little things that happen when we were younger.
So, man, give me more about this. Like I'm this is very, very curious to me. I'm sure my listeners are curious. Like how exactly is this working, and how am I loading my upper body with 2,100 pounds?
So – basically, the thesis for everybody that's listening, we are capable. We are so capable in the strongest range of motion. Guys who lift have no idea what kind of – it's like when I talk about this, it's like the force in Star Wars. Like you have no idea what kind of triggers you can pull inside your body that you're going to find doing this kind of therapy. Where they deal with weights and like there's a professional wrestler. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to mention his name yet because he wants to do some media thing, I think. But he's been using it, and guy with a lot of joint problems. And like instantly, first session, he's like, I'm dealing with more weight than I ever imagined I'd place in my body. And he feels fantastic. And of course, he's feeling his joints less. Now, what's going on is if you have tendonitis in your elbow or you have your bone on bone in your knee, you're still going to be bone on bone in your knee. But compressive forces at that magnitude not only are improving bone density, but they're improving the fibrocartilage uptake, or creating fibrocartilage uptake, I should say, in the joint capsule. So they're improving the integrity of the joint. So if there's a bone on bone moment, there's a little bit more support and pulling away, so there's not as much contact. So guys who are at your level that have joint problems, maybe they can cut their joint pain in half. Maybe they can get to another year of going through contests or go to that next lifting meet or something like that.
Have you done any research directly on systemic uptake of mineral efficiency? So like whether it's that your bones are still, you know, are you going to create osteogenesis, right? Is it going to be a systemic increase in calcium and magnesium uptake? Or is it typically just like a local thing to the bone that's getting the compressive force?
Awesome question. And the answer is magnesium is present in your body if you take it in. Calcium is totally different. Calcium is the only mineral that your body self-regulates. So the more calcium you take in, the more calcium your body gets rid of. So like a lot of people when they, let's say older adults, they start losing bone density and they think, oh, I'll just take a calcium supplement. Well, the problem with that is then they're putting more dietary in, so then they lose bone density faster. And there's some research on both sides of that issue, but it is an absolute fact that your body decides to keep what calcium you have. Because think about calcium is giving you the structure of bone. It's the predominant mineral inside bone, but it's also the energy system of the central nervous system. It's the fuel for the central nervous system. Every time axon and dendrite fires to blink your eyes or breathe or anything that goes on in your body, calcium is being used. So calcium is almost like a battery for energy. So you want to keep more, and by compressing the bone, then whatever you're taking in actually gets used. It actually gets sucked into the bone.
What type of protocol are we talking about here, John? Because I'm very curious for myself. Like obviously subjecting your body to this type of load is going to load the bones, but it's also going to be loading the muscles, the ligaments, and tendons. And I'm very curious about the side benefits of that, because you know, I'm thinking, even if I'm loading in where I'm capable of producing the greatest amount of torque, just by loading those muscles, I'm very curious about how much of a transfer I would see into my strength in typical exercises. So what type of is this going to be a fatiguing protocol? Like, is it like a pre-workout protocol, or is it a workout protocol, or a post-workout? Like, what would you recommend my listeners, how they apply it, and what exactly is the protocol?
You would not do it at the end of a lifting day. You would do it beforehand. And it will not exhaust you, because the fatigue you're going to, from a muscular standpoint, which is what most of your listeners are thinking about or have been thinking about, because they were never given any talking point about bone or tendons or ligaments. What you want to focus on is the fact that you're taking other tissues to fatigue, and you're taking muscle to fatigue instead of from a fuel perspective. So when you lift, you're fatiguing your muscle's ability to hold ATP, glycogen, and creatine phosphate, the three fuel systems in the cell, right? Now, when you take that away, when you bypass that, and all we're doing is fatiguing, well, it's the structure of the cell, right? So if you fatigue the structure, if you take the cell to a point where the central nervous system has to say, no more, we're shutting this down. So when that happens, if you didn't run out of fuel, there's only one other type of fatigue, and that's structural fatigue. So that creates a massive amount of protein synthesis, which is myofibril growth. So I know you've researched that, but a lot of the listeners probably don't realize there's two very distinct types of muscular growth. There's myofibril, which is like the density of the cell, and there's sarcoplasmic, which is like the volume of the cell. Now, most of bodybuilding focuses on sarcoplasmic. However, if you have myofibril growth also, you create more density to volumize.
That's exactly, I did a podcast recently with Jordan Peters about exactly that. Is, you know, get all these bodybuilders off topic, but all these bodybuilders who, you know, the last week before the contest, they're like, oh man, you know, I lost too much water. I screwed up my last week. And the reality is, no, you didn't. You just didn't have any muscle to begin with. So talking about myofibrillar growth is exactly what people should be after. So neurologically, how fatiguing are we talking about? Like, so if I go and apply this protocol today, am I going to notice an excitatory benefit, meaning my muscles are going to feel like they're primed and ready to go? Or am I going to notice a fatiguing result? You tell me about it.
Potentiation, excitatory benefit. Like, you're going to be fired up. And people, like, they put hundreds or thousands of pounds to their body in the lower extremities, thousands of pounds. There's plenty of people that exceed 4,000 pounds of loading through their hip joint. They walk out of there feeling dynamite and ready for a workout or whatever they're going to do with their day. Now, this is older people and highly athletic people going into these osteostrong locations.
So run me through the protocol. Is it a long, is it a short protocol, if you don't mind?
No, it's a couple seconds under load, which it takes 5 seconds to create the record to actually have the biofeedback system capture what you're doing. And I designed the computer system in a way so that nobody would be rewarded for being explosive. So you want your own biofeedback. You want to be slow loading. That keeps it safe. So like I can punch a wall and break my finger, but I can't, no matter how hard I squeeze my fist, I can't break my own finger.
Right.
Right. Neural inhibition keeps us from doing that. Like, so my central nervous system is going to be like, oh no, let's not do that, 'cause we might hurt ourselves. Right. So it doesn't even matter how hard I try. I can't do it. So the same thing with the system. So the computer system wants you to slow load and then slow discharge. Therefore, it just takes a few seconds, about 5 seconds to get there, maybe one or two other seconds holding it to see if you can go a little bit further. And then you offload and then you go through 4 movements. So the whole protocol is 10 minutes and you only want to do it once a week because bone metabolism is longer than muscle metabolism.
Are there any nutrition considerations for this? Like, are you actually making supplemental recommendations to people to augment their current nutrition status? Because, I mean, ultimately doing this kind of stuff, in theory, is very beneficial. But if they don't have the building blocks there, are they going to see some perhaps negative side effect?
One of the challenges with diet is you don't want to turn anybody off. So if you say, like, a heavy protein diet and it's like something you're talking to a vegan, you know, there's a lot of – it's like dieting. It's not like there's one diet that's – works and the other ones are bad. It's that lots of diets work. There are lots of different ways to lose weight. There's lots of different ways to eat correctly. What we say is get the proper amount of vitamin D and calcium. You got to know that's in your diet. People who eat a lot of fish are getting it. People who take like a fish oil or vitamin D, quality calcium over, you know, whatever is cheapest at whatever Target or whatever. We tell people not to do that. And then just general nutrition, whatever plan they follow, because I want somebody who's doing like a paleo diet to understand that in that paleo diet, the proper amount of nutrients are there. If they eat enough green vegetables, they're getting enough calcium. A vegan is actually getting enough calcium and sometimes not enough vitamin D. So the building blocks are there in every responsible diet. We just want to make sure they're aware of what the building blocks are.
Cool, man. So I'd like a little bit more of a cut. You guys want to say?
Yeah. And I was just going to sort of finish up with the bone building. And so what ended up happening when I was experimenting with this, reversed my mother's osteoporosis in 18 months. Wow. And so now she has the bone density of a 30-year-old woman, and wow, she's 80. So she's not going to have to worry about that again. And she's active and she goes and gardens and does all the things that she would want to do, but not limited. Now, how that applies to me, I now have 2 standard deviations above normal bone density. So I have a gymnast bone density. I just turned 41. So that's phenomenal. And based on the degradation curve, if I did nothing, if I quit doing OsteoStrong, if I didn't lift or get any 4.2 multiples body weight, I would have normal bone density when I turn 90. So that's how long that lasts. Bone density lasts a long time. So some of these guys who really want to get to the next level of muscle development, think about your skeleton is your chassis, right? And if you look at a Formula One car's chassis and you look at an economy car's chassis, they're very different.
Yep.
So the more powerful that chassis is, the bigger, more powerful the engine it can handle. So if you put a Formula One engine in a Honda Civic, you're going to blow the wheels right off the car, right? It'll just come apart. But the Formula One chassis can handle that Formula One engine. So what we want to do, what we see a lot of guys doing is they're trying to get that Formula One engine with their muscle, but they don't have the chassis to support it. So ultimately, neural inhibition happens. So if you don't have the structure to have muscle sit on that chassis, if that chassis is not there, your central nervous system is not going to let you contract more. Not going to let you engage more muscle tissue because it's going to say, we don't want that force through bone.
Man, Ronnie Coleman's a good example that comes to mind, right? You know, eight-time Mr. Olympia, squatted 800 pounds. I think he said three hip replacement surgeries on both sides now. Yeah. From just bone deterioration, right? Like something like this may have been, you know, even though he's squatting so much weight, it still wasn't enough to actually improve his bone density because he was so depleted of minerals from admittedly never having eaten anything green. I went through a very similar thing myself, man. As a young aspiring bodybuilder through my teenage years, I don't know if I was aspiring bodybuilding yet, but I went through a phase where I was a vegetarian. I didn't eat any dairy. Sorry, I was a vegan. I didn't eat any dairy, didn't eat any meat. And when I started lifting, 16, 17, 18, my bones would ache when I did like bench presses and shit. And it massively inhibited my ability to train my muscles because my bones would hurt more than my muscles. And not many people ever talk about that, but I'm sure there's other people out there experiencing that kind of thing. And if this had existed when I started, I'm sure I would have been one of your customers, man, because I didn't know how to fix it. I was like, man, you know, my femurs feel like they're going to snap. Like I didn't get it. My humerus also felt like you're going to snap. I didn't get it. I didn't understand bone density when I was a kid and how valuable it is. And then when you can actually start loading those bones heavier, now all of a sudden 300-pound bench press doesn't feel like it's going to snap you in half. Now it feels like your muscles are being the thing being stressed and not your bones.
You got to have everything there. And the central nervous system will stop you from
for sure
overstressing muscle if you don't have the supporting structure there. So it's really a throttle, or you can take that throttle away to muscular gains.
So this is something that people can actually do at home, or they have to actually go into the osteostrong clinics?
Yeah, if it was something they could do at home, I would have written a book about that and had them do it at home. And I did write a book about this, which was kind of an adaptation of my PhD thesis. But you really need the machine and the computer screen in front of you that gives you the biofeedback.
So where are the facilities located? How many do you have now?
You got to go to the website osteostrong.me.
Osteostrong.me.
Yep. And there's 50 plus locations around the United States so far. A couple in Europe coming up. Tony Robbins is a partner in the business.
Oh, wow.
So. Yeah, that's a recent development, and so we're going to start rolling out.
That's huge, man. Good for you.
Yeah. He connects with a lot of people.
Yeah. And the thing is, he's got integrity, man. I've been a Tony fan for over 10 years, and just integrity, man. I know when he says something, he actually means that, and he has his personality behind it. You know, he's got his integrity behind it, and I think that's absolutely massive.
Yeah.
So good for you, man.
What's so interesting about Tony is he is exactly the same guy when you're sitting on his couch with him as he's on stage.
Right.
So when he's excited and he like gets his arms up like this and his hands, you know, they're huge. he is like a raving fanatic about the things that we're talking about, just like he is on stage. He's an intense guy. It's like sitting down with him for a couple hours is like doing like a week's worth of work.
You find that with all the people who are most successful in the world is like, I'm the same person now as I am at home with my kids or my parents. Or you got to be, you know, consistency is a massive thing that, you know, we talk about. This podcast is all just about being, you know, the best version of yourself, the best version of a man that you can be. That's huge. You know, integrity and consistency is massive because people who are, you know, one way your face and a different way behind your back says a lot about their character.
Totally. So I'll parlay into the X3.
Yeah, Perfect.
Okay. So after coming out with this product and seeing the results, I did a research study at a hospital in London. And so what they recorded all the loading data, and then we looked at the whole database of tens of thousands of people. And what one thing that you can, and you can look up this study, it was my last name, Jaquish, J-A-Q-U-I-S-H, and look it up. It's it was published in the Journal of Osteoporosis and Physical Activity. So I learned something about muscle that I didn't think I would find through this research study, which took me in a different direction for developing something for muscle, specifically sarcoplasmic growth. So the other side.
Yep.
What I realized when looking at the data from the study is that humans have seven times the capability in the strongest range versus the weakest range. If I look at the American College of Sports Medicine data on loading of the hip, so they're taking athletic people and they break it out, athletic people and non-athletic people. And this is like in their like handbook of some fancy name, but you know, how do you load somebody? Mm-hmm. So they're looking at educating people who are trainers, physical therapists. So what they came up with, the American College of Sports Medicine says that the average individual can hold 1.3 if they're unathletic or 1.53 multiples of body weight through their lower extremities. So that tells me the weaker range of motion, they can handle that.
Yep.
This is full range of motion. What we were seeing in the study that was done in London was people were holding 8 and 9 times their own body weight.
At the strongest range of motion.
In the strongest range of motion. So what this means is people have 7 times the capability.
What was the specific loading parameter? Like how were they doing it? Do you know? Like muscles were they loading?
So it was just short of lockout, 120 degree angle behind the knee, you know, like that, but your leg.
Yep.
120 degree angle and sort of the position you would land if you were to stand up on your couch and jump off.
Okay.
You wouldn't land stiff legged and you wouldn't land at a 90 degree angle either. 120 degree angle behind the knee.
Yep.
And then they were self-compressing and looking at the data. And then when I compared it to the ACSM data, I'm thinking, whoa, we are missing out on training muscle here. We need variable resistance. Now, Louis Simmons from Westside Barbells, right? He had been applying variable resistance for a different reason. He would call it getting past sticking points. But another way you could say that is you're offloading the weaker range of motion so you can get more weight through that same muscle and trigger more growth.
Right.
So, and I don't think he would argue with that. That's exactly what's going on. But he's also training people in the sport of lifting weights. So he doesn't want something that's going to throw the weights away and focus just on variable resistance. So I understand why he did what he did. And that's why they've broken 100 world records out of that one gym, Westside Barbell. However, for the rest of us, who are not competing in the sport of bench press or squats or whatever, we want to be as strong as possible. So I thought, okay, I think I can very inexpensively create a device that, like, because the bone density devices are like close to $100,000.
Right.
So no one's going to have those in the living room. Tony Robbins has them in his living room, but other than Tony, how do we create something that gives us X load, so like X load when we're at the bottom of the bench press, right?
Yep.
X load here, and then maybe 3X here, and then maybe 4 or 5, or maybe even 7X here. That's what we need. And so I thought, okay, what I want to do is create an Olympic bar. Now, this is the prototype. The production one looks similar, but I can have my hand here, and the heavy latex bands and like thick layered latex bands that hold hundreds of pounds. So not like the Walmart kind of stuff. Hundreds and hundreds of pounds, layered latex, very complex. So I can take my hand from here to here, and this is run with ball bearings inside. It's like an Olympic bar, so your grip is never compromised. So I created an Olympic bar with these hooks on them that has a 500-pound capacity, and then a plate that goes on the floor that you loop the band around, so you're creating a second ground. And so what we can do is free weight movements, and then we can vary the resistance. So there's also a study out of Cornell which shows people doing this type of protocol growing muscle three times faster than the controls. And it was done athlete versus athlete from Cornell. So we know that this triggers much more growth.
That was using specifically your apparatus or just the variable resistance part?
What they did is they made custom power racks.
Gotcha.
They had weight plus bands, but I would say that's inferior because ultimately you want more variance, not less. So when I do, and I tested this with Load Cell, when I do a bench press, it's like 80 pounds at the bottom, then it's 200 pounds midway, then it's 350 or 400 when I'm at full extension. So I'm 41 years old. I'm not getting under a bar that's got 400 pounds on it. Wouldn't even attempt it. But I can hit that 400 or 350 multiple times in my strongest range very safely. Hmm. And the load discharges when I'm in the position where my shoulder's at risk. And so then I built a protocol for that where, and this is all like in the 12-week program, I kind of built it like P90X and kind of build up. People are used to that.
Yeah.
So what I do is diminish the range. So first you go full range until you can't anymore. And then you start doing shorter reps. So you're working the weaker range with the lower weight, but you've already pre-exhausted. And so much of your muscle tissue is basically out of the equation now, because the central nervous system's cut it off. So you end up going finally to fatigue. The last couple reps may just be with that 80 pounds, but this is all in one set without letting any blood into the muscle, so that it is a far more deep fatigue from a sarcoplasmic perspective. So the fuels in the cell are just evacuated of everything they need, which is a signal, oh, we got to add all this back plus way more. And that's why it's so effective. That's why you can trigger so much more growth with that.
How many exercises is that applicable to? So, you know, speaking to that exercise itself, what muscle group are you thinking to isolate there? Is it just that you're just trying to train the movement and get stronger at the movement?
With the bar, I can put a heavy band around here and throw it around my back, and I can do a chest press. I can run it over my traps and push down, and then so I can do a tricep push down over my head, then loop through the ground plate, and I can do the overhead press, or I can do an upright row for the delts either way. Then I can do squats. I can do a front squat where I'm holding the bar like this, and then the band wraps underneath my feet, or I can do a single leg split squat, which when you get some quad development, you know, and all the blood's rushing your quads, way better to work one leg at a time. Also, another thing I said on the Dave Asprey podcast, functionally, I was at a conference recently and I said, a bunch of trainers and physical therapists, and I said, is a two-leg squat functional? And they're all like, of course, it's the most functional thing. Oh, you guys must train kangaroos, because humans walk on one leg at a time. And we like a couple things are happening with a two-legged squat. Number one, that's the position we're in when we stop, not when we move. And everything else is designed to get us moving. So I very quickly in the 12-week program, you start with a two-legged squat because people are used to it. Switch people to the single-leg split squat. Because number one, if you got blood only rushing to one quadricep and one glute, you got a lot more blood available. And also, so I mean, like systemically from your heart's perspective, it can supply that firing a lot easier. Then secondarily, there's stability firing that coincides. Now, Henry Alkire, who's a young, brilliant researcher, and I, last summer, we published a paper that shows that stability firing is one of the keys to triggering growth hormone upregulation. So like the reason, and you, I think you had somebody talking about this at one point, or you talked about, what they talked about was anabolic differences in free weight movements versus non-free weight movements. So last summer, what Henry and I published, it was all about stability firing and its association with massive upregulation of growth hormone. We found 23 studies that all said the same thing.
Explain what that means. So my listeners have an idea of exactly what stability firing means. Like if I stand on a Bosu ball and I do a squat.
Right. BOSU ball or some other thing that's going to give you some level of instability, what happens is reflexes fire all over the body to stabilize you. And those reflexes are going to, they're going to keep you safe, number one. But number two, it's putting your body in an extreme environment where the central nervous system is saying, we need more efficiency from a power to weight ratio perspective. So we're going to upregulate growth hormone and downregulate cortisol. So people who do stability training end up being very lean. Now, who has the most stability firing of anybody? It would be gymnasts and sprinters, right? So back to kind of where I started with the research. You think a sprinter ever diets? I ask this to people all the time. Yeah, bodybuilders diet down. They have to. But sprinters are very lean and very strong. But they got to be high energy all the time. They don't cut calories. They don't have a pre-race.
They're also doing the ultimate form of high intensity interval training though, like perpetually, right?
Oh, but let me get to what's specific about their training. If you look at the head of a distance runner, bobbing up and down like this, right? You look at the head of a sprinter, it looks like it's lined up with a laser. Their whole body is moving. They're throwing their hand back as fast as they can so they can pivot their pelvis and get a longer stride. But their head looks like it's not moving. Mm-hmm. So what that is stability firing all over the body to keep that skull in the same place so they're more stable so they can fire more muscle and propel themselves forward faster. And when that happens, there's an upregulation of growth hormone.
The paradox there, though, is a sprinter is firing muscles as fast and as hard as they can while still finding that stability, whereas someone standing on an unstable surface is firing as few muscles as they can because otherwise they have no capability of producing a contraction with integrity because there's nothing to balance off of. So that would be the paradox, right? I see a disconnect there between what a sprinter and a gymnast is doing, because that's an explosive, highly contractile movement versus someone standing on a BOSU ball being just simply unstable. It seems like it's a different stimulus.
You get those two things closer together. So there's a couple things that have been seen that were associated with upregulation growth hormone that had to do with the amount of weight. So like the amount of weight that goes through your system has a lot to do with how much testosterone you secrete, you create in your body, right? Growth hormone was seen as very similar to that. However, I don't think it's the amount of weight specifically. It's the amount of stability firing. Now, when I have a heavy band running through this and I've got it over my head, right? What's going on? Like this band, like have you ever seen that bamboo bench press bar does this? Right. That is genius. This has the same kind of thing because as stability muscles fire, this becomes unstable. And I'm like jackhammering as I'm coming up to try and stabilize it. So just automatically my reflexes are stabilizing me. So I've got more weight, which is forcing higher degrees of stability firing to get that growth hormone benefit.
So my thought would be, you know, there's always this trade-off between like, hey, I can do a one-legged squat on a BOSU, or I can do a one-legged squat on the ground where I can produce more force output, but I still have the balance consideration there. If I'm doing, let's say I'm doing a one-legged squat or one-legged plyometric or something that requires me to be explosive and still actually have to find that proprioceptive balance compared to a BOSU ball where your force production output capability is going to be much decreased. So where's the trade-off, right? Where's the benefit, the cost-to-benefit ratio from your perspective?
It depends on where somebody is. So you know Phil Hernon, right? A 1996 Mr. USA. I hung out with him about 6 months ago and told him about all the things that we were working on, the research Henry and I did, and how this is pretty much hands down proven. I found 23 data sets that find the same thing. So that study was actually a meta-analysis. So it's like pulling all the studies on that subject together. And it was from different areas of medicine. Some were like physical therapy, some were sports science, some were other things. And so I don't think anybody else would have like really drawn that parallel without really looking for it. So I had him take his training clients, and he's training some of the top IFBB pros who I don't think I'm supposed to mention, but he's taking them through this stability protocol. He's focusing on one-legged squats on a BOSU. Now, some of them, in a few weeks, they get to the point where they can pretty proficiently do a one-legged squat on a BOSU. So then he gives them this. And so they're doing stability firing off the BOSU, but they're adding more weight. So it's a combination of being ready for it. And like in the 12-week program, that's why I start with people with the just the bar right here, and then they're doing a front squat. And they get some stability firing. Then they move to the split squat, which requires a lot more. And then wide stance, so the feet are like this when you first start off doing it, and then they become more lined up as you want to challenge more stability. So therefore, you can get both. Because you need the heavy loading, but you also want that stability firing. So you want to be right there.
That's kind of what I'm after, man, is like how much, you know, like is, you know, maybe standing on a vibration plate versus standing on a, I don't know, a soft ground versus standing on a BOSU, like, or standing on a hard ground. There's a progression. There's a continuum of possibilities of levels of instability. So would it be like I want to progress toward the most unstable surface possible? Or is there just a small necessary amount?
You want to be just on the edge of losing stability. You want to feel like if it were any more unstable, I would tip over. So you want to make it challenging from a stability perspective. And everybody's at a different place. I've seen some of the guys Phil's training who are incredibly muscular, like IFBB pros, that you feel like if they bend a knee a little bit and lift the other leg up, they're going to tip over. They have very poor stability. And then there's some of the other ones. We were working with a baseball player who could almost do like a pistol squat, like kind of ass to the floor straight up. So he was in a totally different place. And then also, coincidentally, this guy was extraordinarily lean and didn't really do anything that is normally associated with people being very lean. So he's got all kinds of stability firing. So I said, it's kind of obvious here. Like, you've been doing something that gives you some stability. You've been upregulating growth hormone. You didn't even know it. And then the bodybuilder who just had been like primarily machines, like never squats, always leg press, always leg extension, he didn't have that there. And so his training's gone in a completely different direction, focusing on the stability firing.
So you're suggesting that this type of training is going to see an upregulation, substantial upregulation in testosterone and growth hormone that should thereby influence someone's body composition.
Right. So when looking at these different studies, so in this meta-analysis, there were some studies that had like young athletic guys, and there were some studies that had elderly people. Now, the young athletic guys had a greater upregulation than the elderly people. But the studies that had the greatest effect, and there was one that showed a 2,800% increase in growth hormone. So this is something that even like a bodybuilder doing exogenous, you know, like through a needle, like growth hormone, wouldn't even get. It had to do with a combination of heavy loading and the stability firing. So that's like when we go to like that split squat that I was talking about, where I'll grab the heaviest band and run it right here, and I'm focusing it all on one leg, and then my back toe is the only thing touching the ground. So like my whole upper body is jackhammering to try and keep me stable, but I'm still running a massive amount of force through that quadricep. And so I'm trying to mimic the results of that experience where the heavy loading plus the stability firing, so we can get the benefit of both.
Any thought from your perspective that it may have to do with simply neurological complexity of the movement, increasing the necessity of firing of the nervous system? Because I know that's been correlated with an increase in growth hormone. Is that as simple as it is? Is because there's going to be a great neurological output?
That's exactly what it is.
So like, you could theoretically get the same benefit from doing like a snatch or like a squat or something that may be a little more neurologically complex.
This has a lot to do with the great results of CrossFit.
Yeah.
Why are CrossFitters so lean?
Like, I was going to say the opposite. CrossFitters are never lean. That's always the paradox.
Some of them are leaner than they probably should be, considering the fact that they only seem to be lifting weight.
Right.
The typical CrossFitter probably goes like once every other week, and then, you know, maybe is doing some things they aren't ready for from a movement perspective. Definitely don't want to throw that under the bus, because that has made people healthier. But I think that when you see some of the movements that they're doing, they're so stability heavy that has a lot to do with their results, because they're firing those patterns. And the more weight and the higher the weight gets, like when you put something across the shoulders for a squat, or you're holding it right here, it's the same thing, or like over your head, like the overhead press, you see with the bands, you see like a really profound, and even in my videos where I'm trying to be as smooth as possible so it doesn't like look, you know, unsafe, because I don't want people to be like, oh, that looks too difficult. I'm jackhammering, like my whole body is shivering as I'm going through these heavy loading moments, especially overhead, where I think it's like close to 200 pounds with the band I use. This is a band I use, the heavy layered latex band. It's 5 millimeters thick. And so I got holding 200 pounds over my head. That's highly unstable. And so I'm getting the combination of stimulating the deltoid and upregulating growth hormone to that highest degree that I think possible, because I'm just at that level of instability.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I totally see that benefit from CrossFit and from anything unstable. Just like the degree of motor learning, the degree of neurological complexity that your brain is undergoing, the BDNF secretion, all that stuff has to correlate with some type of response. Like, your body's going to be in panic mode and thereby probably respond and start releasing growth hormone, which theoretically can have a massive effect on body fat.
Right. Ultimately, this is one of those controversial statements that I always like kind of hesitate to make. But there's 40 years of research that shows that you upregulate cortisol when you do sustained cardiovascular activity.
Sure.
That's the opposite of what we want. Like, that's a mechanism to protect body fat. Basically, your central nervous system goes, we're going to have to exert a lot of energy, and we don't have all that energy here. So instead of making this individual lean and strong, what we're going to do is make sure body fat doesn't leave. And when I see guys, like, even if it's fasted cardio, you're still creating a hormonal situation where you're kind of, you're just compromised. You're fighting your hormones when you do cardio. And now, I think cardio is great for somebody who wants to be good at running. If you want to go long distances and have the cardiovascular system to do that, then great. That's a sport. Good for you. If you want to have a healthy heart, have healthy lungs, and carry around as much muscle as possible and be as lean as possible, then do not do cardio. Like, there's 40 years of research. It's not what you want to do.
We have the exact same view, man. Like, trying to get lean as possible through proper dietary practice and intelligent weight training. That's it, man. It's so simple.
Yeah. And you add some stability training, and so much of this thing is hard to explain. I mean, we just went through some of the details. Like, I've been telling people that you train with this for a couple of weeks, like you're gonna see the difference by the day. In fact, the CEO of OsteoStrong says my wife is seeing differences in my body by the day. Mm-hmm. Now, he wasn't like an advanced trainer; he's a pretty in shape guy, but that's the kind of thing, because he's getting that, like, for the first time in his life, he's surging growth hormone because he's doing like heavy stabilization type workouts ever before. Probably when he was way younger, because he's an accomplished martial artist, because there's some of that in there. But like, very rarely do we put ourselves in a situation where we have heavy loading at the same time we have stabilization firing. And there's actually research that shows that with variable resistance, there's an upregulation of growth hormone. And it's for the reason I believe I'm explaining, because it crosses over in my growth hormone research and my bone density research. It totally makes sense. Heavier in the stronger range of motion, more stability firing, more growth hormone upregulation.
Absolutely. So here's what I want from you, man. I know exactly what internal feeling that you're trying to elicit. So you and I have both done very hard, very heavy workouts where you almost get this, like, you feel like your nervous system is just amped. So what I want from you is I want you to send me the best workout that my listeners could possibly do with your apparatus to give them that feeling, because I know the benefit, the physical benefit to that physiological internal feeling. And I think right now what they would need to kind of fill the gap to really feel the benefit of your device is, like, tell me exactly, like, the workout that will allow me to feel that stimulus. So, you know, that almost like agitated, irritable, like my nervous system's just done a little bit too much. That's forcing it to adapt right now. Like we may have in the past got after a heavy squat or a heavy deadlift workout. I know they can achieve that stuff with this instability training with your apparatus. And I want, if you could send me a workout that you recommend or some videos that they could follow to actually get that feeling, because I know the benefits, the motor learning benefits, and now, as you suggest, the growth hormone benefits. And most people are just going to be like, man, I just don't know how to feel that. Like, what's that supposed to feel like? So I'd love for you to make some suggestions so they can bridge the gap between this theoretical knowledge and apply it.
I will add in the diminishing range also.
Exactly.
That just – it's like the craziest thing you've ever experienced.
And the cool thing about it is that the necessity of the amount of work will be very, very small, I'm presuming, because most people are going to get destroyed just by doing things, one, properly, two, over an extended period of time on this unstable apparatus.
One set per body part. Basically, my workout is 6 days a week. Four sets per workout.
Right. So everybody listening, continue to apply your muscle intelligence execution principles and just add the X3 to your stimulus, to your loading parameters, and see how it goes. And I mean, you could throw it in on an off day. You could throw it in as a pre-workout and see how it goes. I think for weak body parts, I think there may be a benefit there for the motor learning and balance and stability benefit. Ultimately, man, everything we do, you need to learn the skill before you can really load it. So there may be some degree of loading, learning the skill.
Part of the reason when we ship the X3 with three different levels of band, like the strongest one is for very strong people and very strong movements. So, and then the weaker one, like if you watch the whole 12-week program, the 12-week program is designed to take somebody who's not a lifter right now and take them to the very intense loading, very high loading that they would never even get in the gym, and to bridge that gap. So what I'll do for your listeners is something much more aggressive, much more closer to what people are at in week 12. But the first couple of weeks, like the lightest band with a deadlift, kind of 50 repetition sort of thing,
right,
to get that pattern going. Because ultimately, if that pattern's not there, they might hunch their back or have their shoulders, you know, pulled so that they're putting sort of a stretch situation on their trapezius.
So why don't we do this then for the listeners? As you graciously offered to offer them a 15% discount, what I'm going to do is for the first 50 people that pick it up, we're going to do a transformation contest. So anybody who can show me actual physiological changes to their bodies, their body fat, their muscular growth over the first 60 days, I'll invite you guys to my camp at my gym absolutely free. So just let's see if it actually works, man. This will be like your study to see like if we can actually get a growth hormone change and a body composition change just by adding this in. So guys, don't do anything differently. Don't change nutrition. Keep training the way you are. Just add this in over 60 days and document the before and after. So day one, you can take a picture. Day 60, you take a picture. And let's say the top three people who have the best transformation as far as body fat, I'll invite you guys to attend a camp here at the MI40 gym, Muscle Intelligence Gym in Tampa. And maybe John will be gracious enough to join us at one as well.
I'll be there.
Cool, man. So, dude, that's amazing. And I will post links to pick up the X3 and places and locations for the OsteoStrong at benpokulski.com/podcast. Anything else you want to give a shout out to, man?
The website for X3 is x3bar.com. And your, did you say your discount code? I mean, I know you're going to post it, but it's...
It'll be BPAK, B-P-A-K.
B-P-A-K. Awesome.
John, thank you so much, man. It's been a pleasure. Dude, I'm looking forward to see where this thing goes in the future because I know your brain is constantly thinking of evolution. So,
I think between these two things, what we're doing is we're pulling some triggers in the body that we just weren't before.
Yeah.
That's really the takeaway. Like, what is this podcast about? Triggers in the body that you didn't know you could pull. And so from a muscular size perspective, from a power perspective, X3 is going to deliver that. From a bone density perspective, being able to have a chassis to hold more muscle and be less likely to fracture, better biomechanics, that's where OsteoStrong comes in. So I think we're really getting to the point where we can get more benefit and have less risk.
I love it.
Especially like the people over 35 years old. When you're 20, you think, I'll never get injured because I'm awesome.
Right.
But, right, we were all there. But when you're 35, you think, wow, you know, the last time I did heavy deadlifts, like I was, something didn't go right.
Yeah,
for a long time. I remember saying to a relative when I was a freshman and I was getting ready for rugby, you know, how these heavy shrugs I was doing. He just shook his head like, yeah, you're not going to be doing that later. Yeah, just forget that.
I always say, man, I mean, when I was 21, I was deadlifting 750. And now people go, how much do you deadlift? I go, I paid my dues, man. I ain't doing that shit anymore. I like my spine and my bones.
What you will with this, because like when you put the heavy band in it, you're going to be hitting I have a video where I, with load cells where I stick a load cell here and then hook the band on the load cell where I'm hitting 550 pounds at the top for repetitions. But as soon as I depart from that, the weight goes down. And when the joint is exposed to potential injury, the weight may be 100 pounds.
Right. And that's literally what we teach here at the gym. So you'll get a chance to hopefully to come to my gym one day. And we have a line of equipment called Prime, which is basically variable loading parameters. Man, you have a variable cam or you have variable loading torque arm to allow you to play different plates or load it in different ways with plates. And I can make it as light or as heavy as I want at every part of the range. And that's literally the premise that my entire business is built around, is like teaching people how to load this to match what your body's capable of to get the greatest amount of output on every rep of every set. It just makes so much sense because typical exercise, like we said, is 30 years old or longer. And it's useless, man. You're challenging yourself in 10 to 20% of the range. The other 80%, you're wasting your time. And that's why I loved your technology, man.
Yep. Awesome.
Cool, man. So I really look forward to hearing what you do in the future. And tell Tony I say what's up. Hopefully I'll have him on here soon.
All right.
John, thank you very much, man. I appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks so much.
Join us on BenPokulski.com to learn the cutting-edge techniques to take control of your body, your brain, and create your greatest life.